हेलो।
Well, hi and welcome. I hope you're all doing great. As we begin our final of the seminars, I wanted to remind you, as I did in the email, that we'll, those of you who'd like to hang around and just have a discussion, ask questions, or add some things at the top of the hour, we'll do that for a bit of time so that everything that may be helpful to you that perhaps wasn't covered or you didn't have time to ask, we'll do that. So as we begin our final seminar on the business of writing, we're going to look at the various aspects of the business components of writing and what you do with your book. So questions, thoughts, anything you want to add or ask or discuss briefly from the previous seminars or want to be sure that we cover in this seminar? Anything from anyone? I welcome any input or thoughts at this point. Anyone want to just check in? I know you guys are there. And I see on my dashboard who's there, but I'm not going to call on anybody. Final invitation for any questions or thoughts to launch our final seminar. Okay, well, any questions or anything you want to discuss, jot down, and we'll do that at the end and over the hour just for a discussion period. I'll put us on lecture mode so that you don't have to worry about background noise. Okay, as I mentioned, we're going to talk about the business aspects of writing. So here's a brief recap as we discuss selling your story. We've been talking about telling your story. We're going to talk about selling it now. Writing is like selling. It needs to solve a problem or meet a need. Do your groundwork. Foster connections and affiliations. Do research and develop marketing strategies. Any of the 8 or 9 different ways of publishing a book that we're going to discuss in this seminar, what's common to every one of them is that you primarily are responsible for selling your book, whether that's with the most noted international publisher or whether you do everything yourself in a self-publishing or anything in between, it's really going to be up to you. So here are 3 secrets of writing success. You probably already gleaned these already. 1, choose what you want. Choose what you want to learn more about, what you want to immerse yourself in learning and doing and contributing and being creative. Believe it will be yours. And then take positive action toward that goal every day. Now, here's an advantage. As a coach, a consultant, a business person, you already know how to do the thing that writers find most difficult, to think about marketing, to think about the sale. The essence of publishing, it's a business with a bottom line, with risk, with a marketplace, and with a business goal. You create and market a product, your knowledge. A writer may mistakenly put all energy into crafting a message rather than thinking like a business person. Both are necessary. So pause for a moment and think about the questions that you have about selling your book. Think about them, jot them down. Reflect on it for just a moment. What are the questions you have about selling your book. If you haven't thought about it, now's a good time. Let's just pause for 10 or 15 seconds. So let's revisit these questions. One, how do you write a book? Well, same way you began seeing yellow Jeeps after visualizing one. Once you began to think about writing a book, you start to see things in a different way. You hear vignettes. Ideas crystallize. You develop awareness of what you say and how you say it. It makes you a better listener, makes you a better speaker. And remember, no one ever sits down to write a book. You sit down to write a few sentences or a page, but you stick to it. Two, why do you want to write? To sell the book? To develop a second career? To further your existing career? To learn something? For the joy of writing? To make a difference. And consider this, for whom do you write? Remember that your first, most authentic answer is most likely for yourself. Yet, you must respect the marketplace, be attuned to needs, provide answers, make your approaches to answers accessible. You attune to existing needs as well as remain true to your own story. Your gift to readers is who you are. So, let's look now at some options for getting your book published. I should have asked you at the beginning, as we were discussing, to shout out how you're thinking about publishing your book. But pause for just a minute and write down how you want to get your book published, who you want to publish it, or what you think about doing. Right? Just jot down the first phrase or word or thing that comes to mind about how you want to get published. Okay, the first of, I think, 8 or 9, these are in your outline. The first is to self-publish. Now, by that, I mean everything from soup to nuts, to form your own publishing company. And each of these I've done at least one, at least once, with the exception of one. I did this for one book, and I'm going to illustrate the steps from my experience to give you practical application. Now, this is still somewhat relevant, although this was some time ago. Each book can cost between $2 and $3 to print, depending on the quantity. So if you publish a book that companies or large groups can use, you can sell multiples of several thousands. Since you control the printing, if you sell to a corporation that wants 10,000 books for its people, you can easily include a letter from the CEO as the first page of the book. So think about how you can customize it in various ways. That's just one. So here are the considerations and steps to constructing your book if you self-publish. And I'll give you some rough ideas of cost, but every one of these steps is going to be involved in every book that's published. It's just that we began here because you're going to have to do every step. First, after completing the manuscript, you'll need to get it edited. You'll need a professional editor. And line editing is done probably for a cost around maybe $2,500 to $4,000. Email me when you get to this step if you choose this option, or if you want to get a referral for any kind of editing. I have a group that I use, and the founder of that group matches the particular manuscript and author with a stable of editors, and they can do anything from line editing to sort of a revisionist reconstruction all the way to shepherding it to an agent if you want to go that way. And I'll give you a personal introduction to the head of this editing consortium that I use. He'll match your work to an editor knowledgeable in that area and for the most reasonable fee around. Another is formatting. You'll need to get it formatted into a book. Now, remember, you're doing all this yourself if you're self-publishing. In other words, you want it to look like a book rather than a typewritten page. And this is a cost maybe, up to 1,000. Indexing. You'll want to get it indexed. And for somebody to do that, it's a few hundred dollars. Graphic design. Now, simultaneous, some of these things you can do sequentially, some simultaneously. Simultaneous with these three steps, you can get a graphics person or firm to do the book cover, spine, and back a few hundred dollars. And ditto for a referral. The person I'm using now is the person who did all the graphics for the NeuroMentor Institute of Peak Performance. You can see that by clicking on my signature line. I am so pleased. And he charges $60 an hour. It's a deal. He's great. And I'll be happy to do a referral there. You'll need an ISBN number and barcode. And this is something to get your book registered. It's about $100 for both. Printing. You send all of this to a book printer. Now, you don't probably want a bunch of boxes of books in your garage, so you probably want a printer that will do warehousing and distribution. In other words, that somebody can order books from them or order directly from like an Amazon so that your book is warehoused to handle orders for single copies. So that is something, unless you just really like, you know, putting books in envelopes, that's something you'll probably want to do if you really want to focus on writing. So those are some steps and an idea roughly of a sequence and how to do that. That's hard work. That's not something I will ever choose to do again. So hang on. There are other options. One is a subsidy publishing. With a subsidy publisher, you pay part of the publishing cost. The benefit is that you have a publishing house that does all of this work that I just described except editing. You do the writing, you have it edited, and you'll send it off, and the subsidy publisher will print it and sell it. Now, unless you negotiate hard, you won't have influence in any of the choices, including the cover, but that's something you may want to negotiate. Now, this sort of moves into printing on demand. Packages at print on demand publisher, a third type. And this is like Ex Libris, Author House, Morgan James. They usually have a package for somewhere around $1,000 that you can submit the edited manuscript. They do all the subsequent steps of publishing that I mentioned, along with placing your book with a distributor and then listing it for online sales. Then you get copies at an author's discount. Now, the zinger here is they set the purchase price, and it's usually pretty high. For a paperback, it's somewhere around $25, which is high for a paperback. You get author's discount, which is 40% off the cover price for back-of-the-room sales. But now some quick calculations will tell you, you ain't going to get rich at 40% off doing back-of-the-room sales, even when back of the room comes back as a possibility. So they set the cover price, usually high, probably around $25. You purchase for $15, and if you sell, then you make $10, let's say. The benefit is it gets your book out there. You have a book within a few months. That's the benefit of the print-on-demand, and it will be a print-on-demand forever. In other words, they only print a copy when somebody orders it. So they have no overhead. They don't have warehouse expenses and a bunch of upfront costs. So you get to actively participate in this option with the cover. Now, the book I did with this kind of option, I had a specific reason. When I did Making Memories, Reflections on Parenting from the Heart of a Father and the Mind of a Psychoanalyst, I wanted to write that to grieve my parenting of my two kids, and I also wanted them someday, if they ever decided to read it, to read it. I didn't want anybody messing with a comma. I didn't want anybody making any decisions. I picked the cover art. It's an abstract sculpture of a dad holding two kids. Everything was my determination. And it was something that it fit that project at that time. A fourth option is a fulfillment house. Now, a fulfillment house will take an order for your book, print it, prepare it for shipping, mail it to the purchaser. They will have a stock printed of however many you designate so it can be shipped in a timely way. Now, they work with an edited manuscript and cover art from a disc. So you put all this together, send it to them. So for this option, you've completed the manuscript, you've edited it, you've formatted it for the particular style you want. You have the front and back cover and spine done by a graphics person. This, in my experience, is an immensely useful option for training material and workbooks for seminars. I use the same fulfillment house for all of my MentorPath training publications and workbooks. The New Life Story Wellness Coaches Training, New Money Story Mentor, and the resource guide for the teaching corporations how to incorporate coaching to develop an internal mentoring program for organization. All that's done by the fulfillment house. So whenever somebody purchases the training or a hard copy book, pays online, an automatic order is placed at the fulfillment house. It's shipped to the person who purchased it. And they'll print only the number of copies you want to request to have on hand. I request having 10 on hand so that nobody has to wait. So this is an option. They will do regular books. I've not used them for that, but they will do regular books. But it's especially useful for training manual. In fact, the accelerator that CTA used before it became all online, they also used the same fulfillment house that I did. It would trigger an order, and they box it, ship it to the person who orders. They'll do this internationally. The fifth option, a traditional publishing house by way of an agent. Now, for nonfiction books, you submit a book proposal and the first chapter to an agent. That's all you need for a nonfiction book. You don't have to have the whole book. Royalties range from 10 to 15% in increasing increments according to the number of copies sold. An initial advance on royalty is customary, somewhere around $5,000 to $10,000 for beginning authors. You do an advance on royalty. The publisher offers you an advance on royalty, maybe $5,000 or $10,000, and the first $5,000 or $10,000 the book takes in royalties goes against that advance. So the advance on royalty is useful for two reasons. It's money for you. I don't expect any questions about that. It's also the publisher's commitment to your book. So this is a traditional publishing by way of traditional agent. It used to be the only way we'd think about publishing. Now, and I mentioned before, the first question the agent is going to ask you when you seek representation, and you can look in a book called Literary Agents of North America. It will list every agent, what they prefer, how they prefer submissions, what their specialty is, what they've done before. The first question an agent will ask you is, what's your platform? In other words, how many people do you have who actively follow you who are likely to buy the book? And the reason they ask you that as a first question is that's the first question the publisher asks them. Now, I recently referred someone, a colleague of mine in Singapore who heads an international business firm who wanted to publish a book. He asked me, what do I do now? I referred him to an agent that I used for a previous book, and he got back the response, and he's immensely accomplished and has a following throughout the world. The question she asked was, the first question the publisher will ask me is, do you have videos of your presentations on this subject? And do you have presentations lined up on this subject with your following? So that's a specific application of that. Now, here's another option to partner with a foundation or a company. Now, for this option, a foundation or a company may support the writing and promotion of your book to further their cause, pay you a fixed amount to have publication rights to your book and give it as a gift or in their own promotion. Now, usually the author has a special tie with your organization and donates a significant portion of the proceeds to the group. This is not uncommon. You've probably seen books that a foundation or a group will offer as a benefit to its people or as a gratitude to people who donate. This is the only one of these options I'm presenting that I haven't done myself. And if you have any questions about any one of these other than this one, I can tell you more in the discussion. Seven, an ebook. An ebook can be set up for an automatic purchase from your website, for example. Now, there are easy ways to do ebooks. Amazon has its own ebook publishing arm called Book Baby. I did this with one book that a number of the people who contributed to an edited book on the Roadmap system and using it for wellness story, money story, life story, that sort of thing. I wanted to put together a book that they can use, some of you are familiar with this, that they could use in promotion of their practices and illustrate the power of this system. That's an ebook. It's a rather lengthy one. Usual ebooks are maybe 20 to 30 pages. This is a considerably longer one, but it's used for a different purpose. So this can be something that you can sell from your website, or that you can even with a small ebook use it as a gift for a subscription or to get someone familiar with your product and services. Another one I want to add here is one that I'm most recently familiar with. It's an affiliate marketing publication, and this one that I'm going to give you an example of is Launch Moxie, LaunchMoxie. Chris Van Buren, who does Van Buren Publishing, does ebooks that are coupled with an affiliate network. He has 125 or so people in his affiliate network to offer ebooks, and he matches the person to the specific ebooks and courses, like the course that he has taken over and markets for me. He actually did the publication of the three ebooks that are flip books, like audio plus text, on neuromarketing. The neuroscience of persuasion, the psychology of influence, and neuromarketing. And he markets those, and he did an ebook that's a free download to get introduced to the material. So this is a way of using affiliate marketing, because he picks the number of people in his stable who may have an interest or an overlap with a particular area of work or contribution of you know, neuromarketing, for example, and then they offer it to their people. It's been a way to really get a wider dispersion of contact and people, and the people who have opted in just for the free gift have contributed about 10,000 emails to my email bank. So, for any book you publish, consider having an ebook option that you can control. It can work with everything except traditional publishing with a big house. In other words, you publish a book, you want to have control over the ebook version or the audio version of that book, and you can, except with a traditional publisher. And the cost per sale per ebook is pretty good. It's zero. Now, it's a great option for international purchasers because shipping is so high outside the U.S. and Canada. So this is something to consider in the options, or maybe even the blend of options as you consider where to go and what to do with your book. So let's add some things now that you'll want to think about however you go. Copyright. For any form or any venue of publishing, article to book, always keep the copyright on any work you produce. Never sign it over to anyone else under any circumstances. It's your intellectual property. Now, the law grants you automatic copyright protection when you create your work. It's something you do a white paper or any kind of publication. You don't have to register that with the U.S. Copyright and Trademark Office. It's automatic that you own the copyright on your work as you create it. So registration isn't required, but there may be advantages to registering as copyright. Two of the most prominent advantages: registration establishes a public record of the copyright claim, and before any infringement suit can be filed in court, registration is necessary for works of U.S. origin. So, why self-publish, you may ask? Well, self-publishing has at least five benefits. Control. With a traditional publishing house, you sign an exclusive agreement that prevents you from having input about most of the decisions that affect your book, including the cover, the release date. If your book doesn't sell quickly and the publisher lets it get out of print, there's often a waiting period before you're allowed to seek another publisher, and a time period before you can publish another book. Now, that being said, and all the disadvantages, it's still one way to go. For the manuscript I've just completed, I'm planning to do a traditional publisher. Two, second consideration, money. A contract with a book publisher does not necessarily give you a guarantee that the book will get onto bookstore shelves, or how long it will stay on shelves or even available at Amazon if it actually makes it. If you're a new author, your publisher may allocate little to no marketing dollars to promote your book. If it does well, it'll be largely by your own hand, and your reward will be a tiny fraction of the book's total profits. Three, waiting and rejection. Realistically, first-time authors have difficulty breaking into a blue-chip publishing house. Many nonfiction book projects are time-sensitive, and you may not want to wait 18 to 24 months for your book to actually get published. Four, autonomy. Self-published authors usually have confidence and have developed a following by giving talks and seminars. As an expert in your area, you may not need a publisher's approval. You may also happen to like being in the driver's seat of your book project. Five, power of belief. You most probably believe deeply that others will benefit from reading what you have to say, or you wouldn't be listening to this right now, or wanting to get your message in a more permanent form. And I'll bet it's an unshakable conviction. I'll also bet that a deep belief motivates what you do as well as what you write, a strong sense of purpose. That's why you need to write a book and sell a book. You may want to consider self-publishing if some or all of these factors fit. Additionally, there is no longer a stigma attached to self-publishing. A decade, especially 2 decades ago, it was a death knell for a serious author to self-publish a first book. They were called vanity presses. Now it's accepted, sometimes necessary, sometimes expected. I have even heard major agents recommend it to certain authors to test the market. So these are things that I think you may want to consider. And nobody's going to care more about your book than you do. So let's look at titles that tell and sell. Remember, we're looking at the business aspects. Titles. 3 to 5 words that capture the essence of the book's promise. Does the title sell? An answer, not a question. A solution, not a problem. Is the title positive and empowering? Is the title a memorable image, metaphor, or symbol that captures the essence of the book? Is it a hook, in other words? Is the title a prescription for the cure that the book will provide, or the promise? Does the title make a promise the book will fulfill? Does your title offer your unique position, your good news? Does the title speak to one of the 5 great marketing motivators? Fear, exclusivity, guilt, greed, or the need for approval? Now, greed has a bad reputation, but its definition is a rapacious desire for more. That is, a passion, such as to tell and sell your story. Does the title appeal to needs and values of potential readers? Does the subtitle clearly spell out the benefits of reading the book? Want to pay attention especially to that, because that's the benefit that someone reading the book will get. The subtitle says that. So here's an exercise. Brainstorm, and this is always predicated by create an appointment with yourself. No interference, no interruptions. Get grounded and centered. Brainstorm a title for your book. Don't censor or try to focus in only one direction, but free associate. Brainstorm. Stream of conscious. Up to 5 words. Allow a free flow of ideas. Write it down. Put down anything and everything that comes to you. Come up with 30 potential titles that you write down. A second exercise, at a separate time, at least a day apart. Brainstorm a subtitle. Do the same with your subtitle, same free flow, just not at the same time. Carve out a specific time for this exercise. Brainstorm 30 possible subtitles. Then come back to your brainstorm titles and subtitles for a third appointment with yourself and select your favorites. Put those away for 24 hours, then come back another time and look at how your favorites from each category fit together. See what rings true and seems engaging. Move it down to 1 or 2 of each. Then, as another exercise, write 5 to 6 bullet points of benefits readers will get by reading your work. Make it clear, brief, simple. So, here's the publishing roadmap summary for nonfiction. This is roughly in the order of occurrence. Come up with your idea. Do your homework, your research. Choose whether you're going to type, dictate, or write your material. Research the topic and competition. Develop a title and subtitle. Find similar books to model, to inform, to note the differences of them and yours. Design a working cover page. Create a mock-up. Set a distinct binder to hold your materials. Write out a basic structure for your book. Chapter titles, overall concepts, chronology. This is the beginning of your book outline. Organize your ideas into chapters. Create a complete book proposal. No matter what kind of publishing you plan to do, a complete book proposal. Create your first draft of chapter 1. Edit and review the first draft to create a second draft. Read your second draft out loud as another editing step. I want to give you a couple of examples of editing in just a bit. So here are some miscellaneous points. Two crucial elements are execution and marketing. Remember, you don't have to be Lance Armstrong to teach people to ride a bicycle. If you're blocked, skip past it, move to the next thing. Blocked is a state of mind. So move to a state that's more creative. If you're blocked in writing, get someone else in the room and tell them what you're trying to say that you're blocked on. Or even consider having a recorder running because you may not remember. Record, better yet, video yourself pitching your idea. Then get a select other person or persons to critique your pitch. Communicate your message when you're writing. Communicate the value to the reader when you're selling. So let's talk about platform now and where to build platform. So if you're working on a book project, what do you do first? Write your book, set up a website or a blog, start a podcast? Does it matter? Well, it does matter, and what you decide depends on your destination. For a major book deal to publish with a big publisher, you might do things a bit differently than if you want to fill your coaching practice or establish yourself as a professional speaker. Your platform, your presence in the marketplace is how many people you know, mostly how many people know you, as well as why people know you. Your brand is tied to your audience. For major publicity and big book deals, existing platform is critical. To sell your book, as well as to build business and expand your audience, growing your platform is essential. For a major book deal, the first question, as I mentioned, an agent asks, what's your platform? How many people do you know who will buy your book is what that means. So considerations to build your platform. Look at all of the variables, the various social media, the business media, LinkedIn chief among them. Look at what you want to do to develop your material and get your material out there. Blog, podcast, or guest on podcast, affiliate partnership, writing articles, speaking, workshops, seminars, doing things beginning in a small way, such as a single webinar, maybe a webinar series, maybe a series like you're participating in now, where you develop something and offer it for sale, publications in trade journals, presentations at conferences, organization, affiliate partnerships, media exposure, radio, TV, podcast, teleseminars, whatever you can do online, and look at what you're good at, what your sweet spot is. Be sure with everything you do, from website to speaking engagements, that you have a way to capture email addresses. In other words, if you're a guest on a podcast or guest somewhere, you want to be able to offer an outline of what you say so that every participant can print that, have your contact information in the letterhead, as well as a place that they've written maybe some points, but you also want to be able to capture their email to have permission to send them something, so you want them to communicate with you in some way or to request something from you to do something. It may be a free ebook, a free download of a white paper, something that you can capture their emails. To enhance the coaching practice, brand and niche are important. Your brand is your promise. What's your promise? What's the good news of your book? The aha. Make sure you have a way to connect with potential clients and readers from your blog, from your website. 3, it may be to begin to speak more. The easiest way is to have a book. If you want to be a professional speaker, even with a book, you still need to become proficient at public speaking. Begin with Toastmasters. Evolve to workshops. to build keynote addresses, or through an advanced organization like the National Association of Speakers. You'll need a strong niche and brand. On your website, you'll need a picture, preferably audio and video. Be sure all your credentials, bios, speaking one-sheets reflect your expertise. I'd recommend a keynote workshop if you plan to do serious public speaking and charge for it. There's an art and a science to that. I participated in one and found out how much there is to know. You know, and consider for major media, for various kinds of media, visual and in print. Your biggest priority is to stand out in your area of expertise. Now, common to all of these is authentic brand and niche. So you'll want to develop your expertise, and probably the best way to develop that is writing and working with clients, and those will go hand in hand. If you decide to contribute by writing a blog, write it about what you most want to learn about. Make sure the distribution will reach the people you will want to benefit, because those are the people who will contact you because of that blog to become your clients. White papers are another way, and white papers are a piece of writing in itself. Begins with a problem or challenge, and then a particular approach to solving the problem in maybe 1,000, 1,500, up to 2,000 words. It can be a marketing tool for your book or practice. Here's a suggestion. When you do a presentation, have access to a white paper related to the topic available on the homepage of your website, or you can have an associated and an annotated outline of your presentation for signing up for your newsletter or for your blog or podcast. This is platform building. It's a way to capture email addresses so that you can send announcements of what you'll offer. So here are some things, and some of these are dated, some of these have new applications, but here are things you can do to promote your book. Buy a domain name as soon as you have a title for your book. You nail it, you also keep anybody else from doing it. Start your own blog. Write a few articles on your topic. Get a business card. You may want the title of your book on the back. Put together a marketing plan. Look through the internet for groups that are in the middle of or affiliate related to what you do. That's from LinkedIn to ICF to Facebook, any of the social and business media. There are special interest groups. Then think about how you can promote your book, how you can look at various media, various ways of communicating. Look at everything that would apply in areas of interest, and especially as you may be active on special interest group sites at LinkedIn, at ICF, at any of the social media. So the important thing is, as you publish and as you are promoting your book, get to work on your next book. Some of you have heard this. When I was nudged by McGraw-Hill to do a blog when The Secret Language of Money was released, I reluctantly agreed, but then I found how much interest and excitement there was, and over the next about 3 years of releasing periodic, not frequent, blogs, the blogs became the essence of the sequel to The Secret Language, about 50% of the sequel to The Secret Language of Money. It kept me going in the same area of neuroeconomics, the psychology of money. So remember this, authors who get published still need to do a lot of marketing. You will always have to do that, always be thinking about that. That's a part part of what your focus and your interest will need to be to sell your book and to have people constantly interact. You can generate a lot of interest. You can generate a lot of input and get ideas and feedback from people by these kinds of conversations, these kinds of channels, to learn the impact and the ongoing questions that people have, the challenges that you have. So if you want to make a business of your book, if you want to make a lot of money at it, self-publishing may be the right choice because you get all the revenue. The upfront fee is bigger, but at the end of the day, you'll make a lot more money. But remember, this part is not about writing. It's about being a book publisher and a bookseller. That may not be what you want to do. But if you have a story to tell and the capacity to execute it cogently, your story deserves to find a marketing. So think about how you become your own promoter and distributor, and unless you work hard for your book, you're going to be Amazon number 3,375,000. Marketing figured prominently, for example, in the success of L. Trevor Grant's book on New York City's foster care system. Doesn't sound like a bestseller topic. After being rejected by publishers all over town, Dr. Grant, a former social worker with child welfare agencies, decided to publish the book himself. He managed to get the book seen by nearly everyone who had something to do with child welfare and was studying it in college. Someone saw the book and called, at that time, Geraldo Rivera. You got to have this guy on your show. His life has never been the same since. The book is used as a teaching tool in schools of social work. Jack Canfield said he sent a copy of his new book, Chicken Soup for the Soul, to jurors on the O.J. Simpson trial. Whenever the TV cameras panned the jurors during recess, most of them were reading his book. Sales skyrocketed. Most people who buy books will know something about the subject of the book. A much smaller percentage will know the author, and nobody knows anything about the publisher. Readers don't care who publishes a book. It's the readers we all write for. To publicize your book, you have to capture people's attention in a world filled with media noise. Remember your silver bullet, the clear, sharply focused description of your book that explains what it's about, why it's special, and the precise benefits it will provide to readers. In a sentence, the silver bullet. Clear, brief, and simple. So, let's add one thing at the tail end here, the business of writing. Now, here's my preface so that I can say what I want to say to you. In all matters regarding your tax return, be certain to consult a qualified professional. Okay, now let's talk. Many of you know about deductions already for your coaching practice. If you itemize, you can deduct expenses related to the business of your writing, include supplies, equipment, books, subscriptions, expenses related to research, marketing expenses, includes advertising, promotion, business-related travels and meals. Why do you think you read so many novels that are set in Rome, Paris, or Monte Carlo instead of downtown Newark? The key to each of these deductions, keep adequate records. Document the business purpose. If you don't already have one for a related business like coaching, consider opening a separate bank account for business purposes. Take out a separate credit card for business expenses. A separate business name would help, but all it needs to say is your name and business account. For some time now, I have rarely committed a non-deductible act. So here's a final thought, a secret, a Zen story for authors. The thought: once you start writing, you'll never look at a piece of writing the same way again. Once you begin capturing your thoughts and musings, you'll feel a magnetic pull to continue. when you find your personal style for capturing thoughts, images, and feelings, whether that's writing on a yellow tablet, seeing your words materialize on a computer screen, holding a dictation device to speak to an imagined audience, it will have its own appeal when it fits your particular style. Think of experiences that have been pivotal for you in opening new awareness. After my first cross-country bicycle trip with a buddy, I've never since looked at inclines and terrains in the same way without immense appreciation. As a photographer, I see light and framing in a different way. After my first watercolor class, I've never seen an aspen tree since. Any march when I ski without thinking of that particular wrist motion to get that downward branch etching on the trunk in a watercolor. Something God knew in her infinite wisdom since the beginning of time. Your book will take on a life of its own. Now, I hope our time together to consider some notions about the art, the craft, the science, and the business of writing has been helpful, stimulating. I hope it's raised more questions, perhaps even than it's answered, for you. I hope it's been perturbating as well as affirming. I hope it's converted some periods into commas. And what else? And I hope in a small way to inform and guide you to make a difference for yourself and for others with your present and future books. Now here's the secret. One book is like one potato chip. That's it. That's the secret. And finally, a Zen story for authors. An oak tree is brought into creation by two simultaneous forces. One is the acorn from which it begins, the seed holding all the promise and potential for the full mature tree. The other force is the future tree itself, which desires so powerfully to exist that it pulls its seed, the acorn, into being. It draws forth from the germ and guides the evolution from nothingness to maturity. In this respect, it's the oak tree that creates the acorn from which it's born. Your book desires creation. You are already in a unique relationship with it. Listen carefully. Nurture it. Prune it. Let it grow and be born. Okay, we're in conversation mode now. If you'll manage the background noise, I'm interested in really initiating a discussion that we can carry over past the beginning of the hour. I've had a couple of questions that people have sent in, but I'd like to get more of an immediate response. Any thoughts or questions or reactions to what we've just talked about are things that you'd like to be sure that we cover?
Dave, it's Eric Jack here. How are you?
Hey, Eric. How are you, my man? Go ahead.
Good. Well, it's interesting because the last book I published was a number one Amazon bestseller.
Yeah, congratulations. That's great.
Well, as you may well know, the question I have is really what to do to kind of stir the pot and rejuvenate. Should you add a chapter and reintroduce it as a second edition? When you've gotten to a certain point and want to kind of restart everything, what do you do then?
Well, here's what I'll bet. I'll bet before you even completed that book that you had some questions or thoughts about what you wanted to say more about but decided to stick with and create a closure around this completed message, your first book. Go back to what you had questions about or what you thought about adding or a direction to go that may inform the sequel, the second book in a series that will continue the same idea, add to that body of work, but look at what's next. Does that make sense to your?
It does make sense, and it's a great idea. Thanks very much.
And you're familiar with this, the last section of the Peak Performance Training, the NeuroMentor Institute, is also the last chapter of the Hard Work Miracle Playbook about the mind and brain and performance sciences. The last chapter is about dealing with exceptional success, something that I think we deal with commonly in coaching, but don't really have enough of an understanding of how to help our clients deal with the immense success that they have no model for and no plan for and don't know quite how to do it. And that's what I'm developing into a next book after I get this one published, and I'm working on the revisions and all of this right now, but that's something I have in mind. So it's where my thought and my research and my interviews and various things is taking me, and it's what I'm beginning to present on now in some webinars so that I'll get feedback and get ideas, which is why I do the presentations, to get the kind of questions, ideas, and feedback from people that help me shape what's their greatest challenge. What are they really thinking about? How can this be tied to developing what's going to be useful for them? So it's a great question and an important question. And that way, you're not left with, you know, as I've heard it described, and this was from a guy, a postpartum depression after the book was born, because you're already thinking about what's next. And that's exactly what people do when they deal with remarkable success. They don't get lost in the fame or the money or wondering what to do next, but they already have a plan to look at applying their growth mindset to look at the next step, the next challenge. What's an extension of this? What can I do next to contribute to extend and apply this in a new and interesting way? So it's the very essence of what we do to not get stuck at the top of the mountain we climb to, but to create a system to move on from there. So and that's why I think it's a great question. There was someone else who spoke at the same time as Eric. Would you go ahead, please? Or did I talk over? Was that you, Eric, who said, well, did you want to add something?
No, what I just said is I know you're developing that training, and I'll be first in line when it's done. But that's really good advice, and it's something that I think is applicable to what I'm doing. So the answer was very helpful. Thank you.
Okay. So right now, you may have a different answer after you've completed your first book, and it's to Eric and to everyone. What is your core message? What's your good news, your aha? It may be a bit different now or applied in a different way as a next step, the next phase. Now, here's an example of what's your good news, your aha. This one guy essentially said, you know, I got all y'all messed up. It's on me. Don't worry. I got you covered. Whose message was that? That was Jesus. That's a pretty good fundamental message. What's your message? What's the message you have for your book? The answer is going to be how you shape your delivery system based on what you want to give people. So it's a useful thing to think about. Other thoughts, other ideas or questions or things that might be helpful?
Hey, Dave, it's Terry Haswell. How are you?
Hey, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. I really appreciated this. This is the third class that I've attended of yours, and I love each and every one of them. Do you have a question? I loved your advice on just start writing. So I have started writing and just, you know, make that a habit. But what I'm finding is, I'm writing about family and situations like that. Do you have suggestions on, I'm like, ooh, do I use a ghostwriter name? Do I change the name? Like, because some of these people
Do you use a what? Did you say? I want to interrupt you to ask what it was and then go from there. Do you use a what?
When, like a ghostwriter or something, if you're talking about stuff that's personal, that people are still around and that kind of stuff, like, do you change the names to protect the innocent?
Okay,
or
now,
do you use
let's be clear. A ghostwriter is somebody who does the writing for you and puts it under your name as the author. Are you talking about a pseudonym?
Okay. Yeah, that's what I need to know. Like, what's the best way to do something like that when the people, like, I mean, they're funny stories of things, but there's still things that some people might not want to necessarily
here's what I would suggest to think about, and I'm not sure it's applicable for you. People are going to be more interested in what you say and how you say it in your story than they are identifying someone. So, and let me put that in one perspective. When I write, I will never in any way identify and make it even remotely possible for a client to identify himself or herself. I will homogenize it. I will put it in a different context. I want to keep the essence of it to keep the meaning, but nobody is ever going to be outed by what I write. So I think you may want to refocus on what you want to say and make it not personal. Unless this is a memoir, then you'll have some questions to ask. You may get permission and that sort of thing. But if you're writing a nonfiction book that's not a memoir, then focus on the essence of what you want to say and what it is that you write. What distinguishes a successful writer from one of the millions who write? A story is effective when it engages the reader, become immersed in the experience, in the events, in the characters, or the message. Each reader is going to respond and perceive in their own way and their own interpretation, but a good storyteller doesn't try to get a listener or reader to understand his or her ideas or opinions or beliefs, but to examine their own. So the point of a story is not to inform readers of ideas and events, but to immerse them in the experience of engagement. Narrative is not information, if you write narrative, but action, speech, perhaps thoughts of someone else experiencing an event that's shared. The reader becomes a part of the scene along with the characters. So basically, from a different perspective, story is simply the way we make sense of things and the way we convey experiences. So I would say don't get really tripped up by do you use somebody's name, because that may not be the point of the story that you're telling. Is that helpful?
I think so. Yes, definitely. But when you're talking about like family patterns and things like that, and you want to give examples, do I just say that this was somebody else, or do I say it was me, or do you not? You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, like if I say, let's just say I say my dad, for instance, and well, I can't really change that if I'm talking about.
Well, if you're talking about a family pattern, you'll say one family member. Put it this way. You don't have to identify. If you really want to engage somebody in following your thinking and getting them to reflect on theirs, it may be helpful to have specificity but not identity.
Okay. Specificity but not identity. Okay, yeah, that helps. Thank you very much.
Okay, great. One way of saying it is a story is not an accumulation of information strung into a narrative, but it's a design of events to convey us and carry us to a meaningful conclusion or experience. So that's one way of thinking about it.
Yeah.
Other thoughts,
David,
or questions?
David, my name is Scott. Hi, and really, I think the most valuable lesson that I got from this was, and this really helped me, is to write first and edit second. And that was my problem. I'd be writing, and then as I'm writing, I'm stopping, editing, correcting grammar, trying to do, And it was really helpful to, that was just a, some real helpful advice, is just to write, then go back. And let me ask you just some sort of micro questions. When I see a lot of books and the acknowledgments, the authors seem to always, or a lot of times, seem to want to acknowledge their editors. Is that kind of a customary sort of manners of an author to always compliment or acknowledge their editors? I often see that. And
only if you really like them. Next question.
Okay. So it's not sort of a ritual thing that an author must do.
I mean, you acknowledge people you want to acknowledge. That's your message. That's your gratitude. It may include a number of people, and it may exclude a number of people. If they've been very useful, yeah.
Okay. This is another sort of micro question. You know, people that have written books or so forth, a lot of the, and they will ask me, they'll send me the book and they'll say, here's the book, but I really want you, you know, I want you to write a review for Amazon, you know, please, you know, do this. And I don't know, I've always kind of felt that that was kind of a little cheesy, you know, here's my book, but write a review on it. Give me a good review, give me 5 stars or whatever. And I can see how that's useful, but what I'm asking is sort of, Is there a more tactful way to ask people to do that?
What is it, just in a succinct sentence, what is it you want people to do? Write a review on Amazon?
You write a 5-star review, yeah.
Oh, that would not be authentic, because you can't determine if they have a 5-star regard of your book.
Yeah.
So
well,
I wouldn't ask, I've never asked anybody that. I've never asked anybody to write a review. People do, they are generous in doing that, but I think it's not something, it may just be my style, but I don't ask for that.
Okay, I got it. Good. That's very good. Thank you, Dave. I appreciate
If they want to, that's great, but it's authentic. Yeah. It's initiated from them in doing that.
Right. Got it.
Yeah, good question. Other thoughts or questions? I want to share a couple of things from questions I've already had from questions that have been sent in. One is about how much editing is involved in editing. I want to share one experience. I want to share with you the perspective of the process from the experience of a buddy of mine. One of my favorite writers, Jeanine Roth. Is a buddy of mine. She was also an expert content contributor in one of my mastermind groups. She's had multiple New York Times bestsellers. The last was called Lost and Found. It's about her experience as a Madoff victim. And when she was an expert content contributor in one of my mastermind groups, she responded to a question about how much editing she did with her books. And she revealed something I didn't know and was surprising to me. She said she never lets any of her writing be seen by anyone else until she's done at least 30 edits. Each edit improves, refines, and focuses the writing and incorporates expert feedback. Now, I'm familiar with that because I've been one of the people who've been privileged to give her feedback. So you'll want to develop a group of people who might like to read and give you feedback. I want to just briefly review something. I had more than one question about how I go about doing research and writing. I want to share with you what I do to see if it would be helpful to you. Because the first thing I think might be helpful is to know what your particular magic is, what you're uniquely good at. Mine happens to be synthesizing and integrating work in various disciplines to distill into a practical application, clear, brief, and simple. So what I do is I have a couple of dozen Google alerts that notify me on a daily basis of anything in a number of areas, research articles, books, popular writing on any of the subjects that I have Google alerts for, new economics, money, psychology, a number of things, as well as some of my own words that I've coined to see who's writing about those, neural mentor, mentor path, new money story, new wellness story. So to do work applying the mind and brain sciences to peak performance, I've read some of the essential books on the Google Alert topics, performance science, sports and executive mentoring, Navy SEAL training, social psychology, framing influence, neuromarketing, a whole number of things. So one thing I think is valuable is to look at the areas that can be associated with or can inform your approach, even though it's not at the heart of exactly what you're writing about. You may find things that are applicable that never have been done before. That's research, too. Now, I do this best by an immersion. My best and most sustained immersion is the few weeks I spend in a 300-year-old Creole home and courtyard in the French Quarter, because during that time, I can get as much writing done in those few weeks as I can the whole rest of the year, even with sunsets at my ranch for weekends when I do a different kind of immersion. So when I do that, I dictate. I'm in the courtyard. I'm dictating whatever, you know, when I read something, I'll put the book down, and if it's stimulating, I'll dictate something. And I do the same when I'm listening to audiobooks when I'm traveling, going back and forth to my rant. You know, I always have a dictation device. So this is something. Now, let me give you just an example of something outside a traditional scope or topic that can still be applicable. One of the more recent things is a book by social psychologist George Lakoff, who writes about framing political debates. This was recommended to me by my wife, who's in a PhD program with a guy who's written 72 books on white racial framing. Lakoff demonstrates how even though facts are important, they're only taken into consideration when they're framed in particular ways. And his book that says all of this in application of social psychology is Don't Think of an Elephant. Now, that statement, the title of his book, ensures that you're going to think of an elephant. Neuroscience and quantum physics shows us you get what you focus on, not what you want. And that focus can be determined in a number of ways. So he demonstrates in the title of the book exactly what he's going to be talking about, that how you frame something depends on how you process it, the information that you see, and how you get to that process. Let me give you one more example. A buddy of mine who's written a number of books, including New York Times and Wall Street Journal bestsellers. Many years ago, I flew to Massachusetts to drive to a picturesque part of the state for his wedding. I'll take any excuse to visit my daughter and granddaughters in Boston. Now, his book that was just released, he spent 5 years writing it, including doing research by spending a few days on an aircraft carrier, since his novel is set entirely on an aircraft carrier. His initial draft was 152,000 words. He hired a highly recommended writing consultant in the UK who specializes in thrillers, and in this book is called Steel Fear, who sent him a 25-page single-spaced detailed review, and he spent several months condensing it to a second draft of 129,000 words. She read it again and said it needed to be leaner, cleaner, tighter. He got it down to 120. An agent then nudged him to get it close to 100,000 words. Some suggestions. I was involved in this because I was a consultant on developing sort of the psychological profile of the protagonist with him. He submitted a final draft, 103,000 words, to his agent, and he now has a 3-book deal. So it involves editing and parsing and still working with it, exciting stuff, but it needs perseverance even after you do it. So this is just an example of not only editing, but of listening and revising as you go through the process. Now, I took a little bit longer than I intended on that, but there were two or three questions that related to that I wanted to be sure and cover it. Other things that would be helpful to you for us to talk about, just in discussion?
Dave, let me ask you this. Just as the issue that you just brought up, are there people that you could send your draft to that would give you reviews, like professional reviews and recommendations and so forth? And how would you find those people?
Well, that's what I mentioned in terms of when you're ready to have your manuscript edited. I would highly recommend an editorial service. The one I use, the founder has a stable of editors who will match the editor to the particular person in the genre or the type of work, and they'll do anything from a line edit to a revision depending on what you want, and even submit something to have someone look at it to suggest an agent. So when you're ready for that, send me an email and I'll be happy to do an introduction, because I think you will each need professional editing of a manuscript. A final edit may be to read it out loud, or here's something that I found really helpful, to be in a writing group and have someone else to read a passage, because that way you really hear what you're saying. You don't get to say, oh, wait, no, you need to pause after that word, and that you need to linger a little bit longer after that. No, you don't get to do that when somebody's reading your stuff. And when they read it out loud, you get to hear how they read it. So that's also a perspective. So definitely that will be one of the edits, one of the final edits, if not the final edit, is to have it professionally edited. And one way is to simply have it line edited, line by line, for grammar and being sure it makes sense and is constructed in a reasonable way. So, yeah, that's important, and I'll be happy to make a referral when you're ready to do that. Send me an email. Does that answer your question?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Super. What else?
Yes, this is Valerie Carr.
Yeah. Hey.
Oh, good. Yeah, so I was looking at the self-publishing section, and you mentioned the subsidy and the print-on-demand. Do you have any tips on finding or determining if someone that you're speaking to is reputable or not?
When you say speaking to, you mean a publishing house?
Yeah, like to work with they're self-publishing, but they're, I guess I'm thinking it's probably a city publishing company where you kind of pay a fee, they help do all this stuff, but you're kind of in between with them. I've been talking with one and I'm just not sure if it's...
Well, I would go with one of the more well-known publishers that do print on demand, because you'll see their catalog. You can talk to people who may have published with them. And I mentioned the three, I believe, still that I would consider at this point, Author House, and I've had some buddies who have had really good experience with them, even in with business books. Ex Libris, and that's the one that published Making Memories, and Morgan James. And I've known some people who have had good experiences with them. And I would stick to the better known of those. There's not much advantage to all the Me Toos. You don't save any of little, if any, money, and you have the major publishers in this area who have had experience, who know what to do, and you know what their packages will entail. So I'd stick with the ones that are more well known there.
Okay.
And they'll give you a quote and an idea of the packages. You may not need all the bells and whistles, but you need just the basic package, and you'll see the options that each will have.
Okay. And with those, you still are pretty much responsible. I mean, you're the one selling it, correct? The author is selling the books?
100%.
Selling.
Yes. Well, you'll probably see, like in the Sunday New York Times, the book section, there may be a page that one of the publishers, like Author House, has a picture of the books, maybe of the 15 or 18 books that they have published. That may be the promotion that you get with a place like that, and that's part of the package. They'll do a picture of your book in the Sunday Book Review magazine for the New York Times, for example. But you'll see what you get, and you can compare with the majors. I'd really stick with the majors in this way.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. Any other questions or thoughts or final words? Well, thank you so much. It's been a privilege to have these discussions with you. I hope it's been beneficial, stimulating. I'll be eager to hear from you. Let me know if I can be of help to you in any way. Thanks so much. I hope our paths cross again. Thanks and good luck.
Thank you.
Keep writing. See you guys. Bye now.
Thank
Bye
you.
Now. See ya.